This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey, good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. Not sure where you're at in the U.S. or around the world, but we know that we have over 100 countries listening to the show, and we really appreciate it. It's a milestone for us. Thank you, everybody around the world, for taking the podcast and sharing it. The numbers keep getting better and better, and we need your help all the time. So don't forget, the audio goes on Baseball Outside the Box, and the video is on YouTube at Peter Caliendo. Subscribe to both, get updates. Facebook people, if you want, you can ask questions on the chat there. Just type them in and we'll get the questions asked. Hey, listen, we're getting into, we've done this a few times. We're getting into a topic that we really enjoy and think it's one of the most important topics when it comes to the development long-term of players. And that is organizing a practice, which is productive when it comes to game situations and it transfers in the games. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for stuff, how to do it. Cause I remember when I was a player, you know, I practiced a lot, you know, and matter of fact, last night's show, we talked about it. And that was, you know, Ernie Banks said to me one day, well, you got a great swing. Well, fantastic, but I couldn't hit. Why? Pressure, right? Lots of pressure. So we're going to talk about that stuff. I'm a great example of that. We need it. We're going to talk to this gentleman is all over the internet, and he's also spoke at the ABCA Youth Convention, which was an outstanding talk. And he's, you know, he's really great. He always forwards all our stuff on social media. Never met him in person, first time, but I love the name Anthony Pla. He's the head coach at Lincoln University. If you're wondering, Pla, half Puerto Rican and half Sicilian. We're going to talk about that because we love having both the Latins and the Italians on the show. They're very exciting people to have on. So let's welcome Anthony. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, Pete? Thanks for having me. I appreciate you. Absolutely, man.
I got to throw the Italian in there. Literally, when you told me your mom was Sicilian also, right? And I got great friends in Puerto Rico. And what a combination.
Hey, best of both worlds. The best food on both sides of both sides right there. You can't beat it.
Not only the best food, but the passion, right? I mean,
when you talk about
baseball now, we're talking about Italians, you know, passionate in general. And then you got, you know, the Puerto Ricans who love the game. Holy Moses. Hey, tell us, what have you been doing with your players during a little bit about during the pandemic, you know, and if you, I think you just came from practice or workout. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, you know, last year, our season unfortunately ended on March 9th, right? And, you know, now it was like no one knew what to do. So what do you got to do? We got to try to figure out a way to, one, keep the guys engaged, right? So once these Zoom things started happening, you know, we just jumped right on it and just said, you know, hey, guys, we're going to meet, you know, once a week, once every 2 weeks. You know, just stay fresh. They're still in school, right? So we got to make sure they're still going to class. And then we realized really quickly that, you know, hey, we can make some, you know, videos. We can make some, you know, just give some information. We can put some PowerPoints together and or just show some videos from other guys online doing things. And we can actually still kind of have practice in a way to be able to help. And, you know, throughout the course of the summer, we started getting better at it. And, you know, we're going all these different kinds of things with you and with the Stick and Ball TV and with the ABCA. And everybody's got something great going on. So many great speakers. You know, you take a little bit of everybody and you give it to your players and see what can come up with. And, you know, we did that all the way through the summertime. And, you know, we kind of, you know, obviously gave them their summer, you know, go hang out. Some guys played, some guys worked, some guys did internships, but it's been a crazy time. You know, the whole world's kind of, you know, slowed down, you know, time's almost stopped a little bit, but we still want to try and get ourselves prepared for the year. You know, we're hoping and praying we're going to play this year. Well, here we are January 25th, right? Our first game's in a little over 2 weeks and we got to be prepared. So when we came back in the fall, we didn't have everybody here. So the guys that we did have, we had about 10 guys. We went through all the same workouts we would do on the team scale, but obviously made it a lot smaller because we only had a few guys. Then you got pitchers and catchers and hitters and infielders. So you had to make it work. But still being able to do all those Zooms and getting everybody involved, I think it was super important because it gave us a chance to kind of stay fresh up here because this is where it's, you know, the game's played mostly up here, right? The physical stuff's going to take over. So we wanted to try to do that. I thought it was great. And, you know, now that we're back, we've been back for 2 weeks. We've been practicing for about, I want to say it's been about 11 or 12 days or so. You know, we're back into it. Got to knock the rust off, get guys, you know, in game shape. Get guys in the mound. We're going to get there. We'll be there when we need to be. You know, February 13th is going to be here by tomorrow, right? And, you know, we just felt like we were able to get so much great content and create our own great content and give it to our guys where it was on their level, our level, and what fit our program. I'm not going to take, the Red Sox do and Coach Fenster, who's an amazing guy. I love the guy to death. Like, you get that guy's information and give it to your guys, and it's not the same level. So we got to, put it to what they are and what our style is, the way that we make our program. You know, same thing with all the guys, I got friends that, work for the Giants, guys that work for the Twins, guys that work for the Cubs. Like, I know a bunch of guys, and I got other guys that are, Division I guys, Division II guys, Division III guys, JUCO guys, all have great stuff. Well, how do I make that fit my program and my guys and what we do and how we work? So it's actually been pretty cool to kind of, it's made my coaching stuff a lot better, I think, and able to get it across to all my guys in different ways. And, there's, how many drills for hitting, right? Now there's different ways to even show it on a video or on a, PowerPoint. So it's been pretty cool, I think. And I think we've all learned how to be able to get through this time with some opportunities to still learn and still build and still get better without actually being all together at the same time. So it hasn't been all bad.
A great explanation because, like you said, and we're going to get into the actual practice organization. We'll try to hit every age if we can. Also internationally, some of the issues there. But what's interesting as a college coach, what I'd love to know is the players that you get as a college coach. Is there something consistent that you see that maybe they lack, that they might need to be training more at the younger levels? So when you get them, you don't have to really get into that part. Is there something that's kind of consistent?
Pete, this is a funny question because I think you've asked this a few times. And I know that I've heard this question a few times. The number one thing I've seen with guys at my level in general, not necessarily even my program, base running is horrendous. Guys don't know how to run bases. They don't know how to run bases. They can't slide into bases. It spins so bad. I think as far as pitching goes, I think guys always come with a good idea. They have a program that they've been using at the youth levels and they bring it with them. And then we add to it. And now they create their little program that they use for themselves. And everyone's individualized a little bit, even though it's a team game. Infield defense, outfield defense, a lot of similarities, but we're not just hitting fungos all day long. We're going to try to break it down to really small parts of it. But honestly, and hitting, everyone's got their own philosophy on hitting. And sometimes we change it. Sometimes we just go with it and we have to relate to our guys, but the base running is literally the worst. And the mindset, they make a mistake, they make an error or they miss hit a ball and it's the end of the world. The mindset, guys being a little bit weak-minded sometimes when they get there, a little immature, I guess would be the best word. Those are probably the two, base running and a little bit of immaturity. I wouldn't say they're really immature, but definitely making them grow and being able to go pitch to pitch, play the game pitch to pitch. I think that's something that we see lack of.
But, great points you brought up. And I do ask the question quite a bit because I sometimes get some different answers, but I'll tell you one consistent answer, and that is the mental part. We just had Chris Goodman, who's one of the minor league mental training coaches for the Rays. We talked about it, because the mental game's so important. Well, we can't wait till they get to high school and college to start training them on how to deal with failure or how to prepare for something very difficult, difficult situation. So right. The mental game hits. And here's the other part I was going to mention since you brought it up. I thought it was very interesting. I grew up at a baseball school for 10 years, Mickey Owen Baseball School. We taught fundamentals. Not many guys are teaching sliding. Okay. And I don't know why they don't do that because one, at a young level, safety is an issue. Two, you do it so much in a ball game that it's part of the game. It's as much part as base running is. So I can see where, and here's the question, I guess I'll ask you on the base running, cause you brought that up and we can almost tie it into like a as you practice it in game situations. Yep. Or practice. Is it possible, because I see a lot of young teams, the coaches control them on the base pass all the time. They're not allowed to make decisions. Well, you got to make decisions when you're young so you can make some mistakes and then you gain those instincts. No,
I agree. So, I mean, case in point, and I'll give you part of, I call it the beast. Now we created this practice plan that makes it happen. And you can make whatever you want out of it for practicing, but for base running specifically, to answer your question about making it more realistic game life, make them run bases during batting practice like they're going to get their reads. So if you have a bunt round, get their bunt reads. If you have a hit and run round, get your hit and run reads over at first base. if you're doing a drive him in round or maybe move him over round, get your reads off of the bat live in BP. You know. So the way we do it, I'll give you a quick example of this is, let's just say we have 15 hitters. You got five guys at the plate, you got five guys at second, and you got five guys at third. So the guy at the plate, his job is to move those, to score those guys, or at least move them over, right? And you can go no outs, one out, and you can put guys on all bases. All depends. You can make it your own.
Call any situation you want.
Exactly. So right now we got guys on second and third, less than two outs. We got to either drive them in or score them, right? And or at least move them over. Mm-hmm. And what you do is the guy that is in the box, if he hits a ground ball to the infield or through the infield, he's got to go hard 90 to first base. If he hits a base hit to the outfield, he gets out of the box, rounds first base, depending on where the ball went, and either stops himself at first or he takes off, tries to get two. After he's done doing what he does, he just jogs over to second base and he just joins the next group. The guys at second are, if it's a ground ball to his right, meaning towards third base, he's going to go back to the bag, read the throw, and then take off. If it's to his at him or to his left, he's going to take off. If he's at third, or if it's in the air, he's going to turn around, face it, wherever it is. If he can go and has a read, he's going to take off and try to score. If it's going to be a fly ball, maybe if it's in left field, he just stays halfway. If it's in right field, he tags. Now, if you're on third base, hard ground ball, we're working that contact down play every time. If you see a hard ground ball down, got to take off and try to score. If it's a tag play, every ball in the air, my team, the way we do it, every ball in the air and you're on third base, it's a tag play. I don't care how far it is, how hard hit it was. If it's in the gap, you're going back to tag no matter what, because we got to score that run. Mm-hmm. That's with no outs and one out. So you can do that, and you can honestly take that and run with it, and you can make it whatever you want. But it's live swings, live swings, no defense. Nobody's playing defense.
No defense. I was going to ask that.
No. So no defense. You're literally concentrating on base running and hitting, and that's it. Great. You can incorporate defense, obviously, and just have guys making plays. You can do that as well. But the first, or, you know, two times, maybe three times you're doing it, no defense. Somebody on the mound's throwing BP, make a play, get your hits in. And typically you'll see all the balls. Typically guys are trying to hit the ball to the right side and make them score, or at least get them over. So it's a great way to make it happen. I actually stole that from a couple D1 programs that have stuff online. So listen, I don't want to reinvent anything. I just want to make it work for our program, and it seemed to have worked pretty well last year. And I want them, like you said, you want guys to make mistakes, so be aggressive, make a mistake, so we can do it in practice and do it while we have, you know, game-like reads off of the bat in BP.
Yeah, and, you know, the other part, because we talk about sliding, talk about an area that's not really developed or really taught a lot. We need to start teaching it, and that's some basic skills or drills to, you know, let kids feel comfortable how to do it. Finally, once they feel comfortable, I'm a big believer. I know I'm going to get criticized a little bit, but I'm a big believer that, you know what? I know it's practice, and I know kids can get hurt. But if you don't practice it in practice, it's going to be worse than a ball game. So I feel like you've got to have times where you got to be, even in practice, you got to be sliding at the bases, because that's what happens in the ball game.
I agree, Pete. And you know, the thing with it is that, you know, we teach guys how to take leads. We teach how to get secondaries. Well, you also got to teach how to get back and get dirty.
Yeah.
So we do that too. You know, the way that we do it is we have, you know, regular first base, and we put three or four drop down bases behind it. One pitcher on the mound, four or five guys get in that line. They get their leads, their primary leads, or whatever lead we're working on that day. And if the pitcher jumps back and turns like he's going to pick off, everyone's got to get dirty. Everyone. You got to learn how to do it. You got to backside of the base. You got to learn how to get dirty. It's the same thing if we're doing a hit and run or a straight steal. Typically, most of the time, people will do a straight steal. They'll do the first part of it where they get the jump.
Right.
And they run a few steps and they break down. No, go slide.
Yeah.
Go figure out how to get there. And I'm a firm believer. You got to be able to do it, you know, and some guys teach, you know, feet first, head first at certain bases, whatever the case may be. Whatever your philosophy is, teach it early. Do it, break it down to the smaller scale, like the last, you know, 15 feet, one, two step slide. So they get used to it. If you're lucky enough to have turf, slide as much as you can.
Right.
Because you won't typically get hurt, or you get hurt a whole lot less on turf. If you're worried about kids getting hurt, get them on the grass for 10, 15 minutes and work on it. Throw a drop down base out there and make it happen. Because listen, I just need guys to be able to not scorpion themselves when they're doing the head first slide and the second base, or, you know how to do a pop-up slide, because in our level, and, you know, at the big league level, every inch that you can take from the other team, you got to take it. So if you can do a pop-up slide in the second base and there's a bad throw, you can get up and run the third base and take that base. You got to be able to do it. So I encourage everybody, Pete, everybody to make sure that they practice it, even for a few minutes a day. It doesn't have to be the whole practice.
And that's another great example, pop-up slides. Okay, if I'm 12 years old, well, I got a pop-up slide and go to the next base, especially if the ball's in front of me. Plus, it's fun, man. You know, and it's
I agree.
Not only is it fun, but you're making a decision, right? So in order to make a decision, guess what? You got to know where the ball is at least if it's in front of you. So part of that, you know, and we, because I know we tend to focus a lot on college and pro, and even sometimes high school, but we forget that we got to get these kids young doing some of this stuff. So that way, you know, we're not reteaching all this because there's so much to the game. And now at your level, it's, you got to win. You know, you can't just be teaching fundamentals all the time, but you got to figure out how to win. Right. Yep.
And to be honest with you, something like that, someone that can't slide can hurt you.
Yeah.
You know, it could take away an out. You know, if he's the kind of guy that struggles with sliding and, you know, we put a steal on and he, you know, stumbles and fumbles his way to second base and he gets in there and he's probably going to be safe if he slides the right way, but he doesn't do it for whatever reason, you're in trouble. So, I mean, we practice it a lot, you know, especially early on in the fall when we have the guys, you know, in smaller groups, and just, you know, you have to do it. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, the big leagues are the greatest example because there's certain guys that want to get dirty every time. Some guys don't really get dirty that much as far as, you know, sliding or whatever the case may be. And you notice the guys that are really aggressive, super aggressive, the guys that steal bases when they attack the base. So I heard this during the ABCA last week. You don't slide to slow down. You slide to stop.
Yes.
And I love that. I forgot who said it. I'm drawing a blank right now, but
yeah, I remember hearing that.
It might've been Bobby Scales from the Pirates. It might've been,
Bobby Scales.
It was either him or maybe Gilly, or could have been Tallarico. I know a bunch of guys that I know to do base running stuff, but, it was so awesome to hear that. I'm like, man, that's exactly what I've been trying to say, but those are the right words right there.
Absolutely.
You don't slide to slow down. You're sliding to stop.
Yes.
So if you do that the right way and you attack the base, I mean, you're going to be a lot more safe than out, I think. And it's okay to make mistakes in practice. That's what this practice is for.
Great point, Anthony. You know, just like most podcasts, the audiences are going to be volunteers at the youth levels, travel ball coaches, high school, college, could be professionals. You know, it's not something we need to get into in depth, but because we have teams all over the world that listen, talk about the basic fundamentals of practice organization. When you talk about having a plan, the equipment, all that stuff, kind of give a guideline of it. And then we'll get into the heart of it a little bit.
So I'll kind of talk briefly the way I did at the ABCA. So what I'd like to do is I like to start from the end goal, which is game one. And I like to start there and work my way backwards with my practice plan for whenever my season starts with practicing. So for us, we have the luxury of being able to start in the fall, right? So I start, our first game is February 13th. I go all the way back to September 15th, working my practice plan to get us ready for February 13th. So if I want all my guys to be at, you know, 85 to 100 pitches for my starters and maybe, you know, 60 pitches for my relievers, and we want to have this many swings in, or we want to have whatever all of our bunt coverages, first and thirds, cutoff, relays, all those things like that. I want to have all this done by then. So I go backwards and say, okay, these are the first few weeks we're going to get into our fundamental work. We're going to work on what we're looking for, hitting-wise, defensive-wise. And over the course of September, October, November, we install all of our programs. Here's our bunt coverages. Here's our first and thirds. This is what we're looking for in BP. This is what we're looking for pregame, warm-ups, mental game stuff, you know, everything to the minuscule thing that we have to get to. And as we go through it all, we get to November, and you know, we're also weight training, so we got to put that into perspective as well. So February 13th is the end goal. How do we get there? And you can chunk it up and put it into different aspects of it. We're really fine tuning things as much as we can in the fall to get us ready for the springtime. By the time we get to January, I want to roll the balls out and say, let's go, guys, let's refresh. Let's get back to here's our first and thirds again. Let's make sure we got them down. Here's our bunts again. Let's make sure we got them down. So this past fall is a little different. So this spring was like a lot of hurry up. Hey guys, we got to do this. Hey guys, we got to do this. And we're still doing it now because we didn't have the whole team here. So if you have, let's just say you're a youth guy or travel ball guy. You only have two days a week, 2 hours a night, and then you play on weekends. So what are you trying to accomplish? And maybe you have a month before your season starts. What are you trying to accomplish? Well, the end goal is if you're the older guys, you're trying to get these guys good looks for colleges and make sure that your team is prepared to play games and play it the right way. So what are you doing for that month, let's just say? to get you ready 2 hours a day for two nights a week before the season starts or whatever it is on weekends. And you take those, you know, 6 to 8 p.m. time blocks and say, what can I do during this time to get us ready where we got to be? So you could do it in blocks of half hours. You can do an hour and then two half hours, or an hour this, an hour that. Most people do a half hour or an hour defense, an hour in offense. Mm-hmm. Okay, where are the pitchers and the catchers? Got to get them involved too. So if you can break it down, especially if you have multiple coaches. Now, I was a guy for 12 and a half years. I had no assistant coach. I've had an assistant coach now for the first time in my career here at Lincoln. It was a year yesterday. And I'll tell you what, this last year has been so much easier to working with Coach Connor. It's been tremendous. But if you're lucky enough to have a few coaches, you can break up the pieces a lot easier and simplify it for yourself in a 2 hour block. Knowing you got to put some mental game in, mm-hmm. you're going to do hitting, defense, team defense, team offense, your pitchers, your catchers all got to get work, base running, all of it. Well, how do you break it up? Well, what's most important to you? Put that in there. You don't have to hit every day, even though everybody likes to. You don't have to. If you have to get your team defenses in, we'll take the bulk of your time there. So I think that, and I guess I'll say this the easy way, whatever's most important to you and your program, get those things done. If it's not that important to you, then don't get it done. But understand this, at the youth level, your goal is to get them to high school and then get them to college and prepare them for that. My job is to get guys ready for the real world and hopefully pro baseball. Because the options are, you know, the you're not going to, one point, was it 0.0% of guys play Major League Baseball. So I got to get them ready for those two things. Well, the high school guys got to get them for college, and the youth guys got to get ready for high school. So what is it going to prepare those guys to get to those levels? And that's what the real main goal should be. But if I want to get ready for game one, what do I need to do to put in place to get my team ready? And you need to break up your practices in such ways that you'll be able to get everything you want done while making it competitive, while making it fun, but knowing that we have to get the work done. You don't got to take 1,000 swings to get the point across. You can take a certain number, because it's also, you know, quality over quantity sometimes, because you can take 1,000,000 swings and still have a, you know, terrible swing. But if I take 100 solid swings, then I had a good night. So I just think, you know, it all depends on where are you, inside or you outside. You have a small facility, big facility. Are you in a gym? You know, are you in this little box? You know, some people have really nice facilities. Some people don't have a nice facility. Some kids work in their basement with their dad. You know, it's whatever you got. What's the plan? Make yourself a plan. And I think that's, you know, being organized is number one for me, is my number one priority. Being organized. We have our practice plan. We set it up. It's on me at all times. We know what we're doing. Our kids all have it. They have it the day before. It's in the locker room. It's on the field. It's at the field, in the dugout, posted everywhere. It's sent to them, so they have it on their phones, because everyone's got a phone nowadays. It's limitless what you can do. But I think if you're not organized, your kids and your team's not going to be organized, and it's going to show on the field.
Anthony, a couple things. One, you mentioned, you know, you were by yourself all these years. That's incredible. I mean, they talk about exhausting, but at the same time, had to make you a 10 times better coach, because you had to learn a lot about the game itself.
Well, you know, think about it. You know, there's 9 different positions that do 9 different things. And we like to couple the infield and the outfield together, which I understand, but middle guys are different. Shortstops are different than second baseman. Third basemen are different than first basemen. Are they interchangeable? They can be, but there's so many nuances of each position that you have to learn, which makes you better. Same thing with left field and right field and center field. And then you got to learn about pitching, and you learn about catching. I was lucky enough as a college guy to be a catcher and a second baseman. So I had the best of both worlds as far as infield goes. I wasn't a pitcher. I never was. 5'7", 150 or 160, whatever I was in college. And I wasn't going to pitch, but I had to learn a lot as a catcher. And I think that over the last 12 years, you know, getting on into some of these podcasts, getting into, you know, reading some more material or whatever the case may be, watching videos and listening to some other guys that know a lot more than I do, just picking their brains and stuff. And you learn a whole hell of a lot. But I think that it goes more than that, because you can learn all you want. Can you install it with your program? Can you let your guys learn the same stuff that someone else is saying? I think that's where it gets super important. And to be able to take something about, whether it be a grip or, you know, the way you feel the forehand, or, you know, how to, the crow hop is almost going to become non-existent. We're getting to the pro step now. Like a lot of things have changed. I mean, think about it. I've been college baseball. I started in 1998. You know, I'm not that old, but I'm old enough now to understand that the game has changed quite a bit in the last 20 something years. So I'm going with the times and I'm learning from a lot of other people, and it's been awesome to be able to bring it back to the kids. And, you know, the kids can tell if you know what you're talking about or not. They know if you're full of it or not, but so at the end of the day, you know, I want to make sure that I'm giving them the right information and speaking the same language, which I think is super important as well.
You know, folks, I mean, so well said. So I know that all the coaches listening have got a good understanding now of, you know, that somebody just can't lay out a practice for you. It's all about your players, their abilities, what you need to accomplish. Everything you just talked about was so well laid out. Now the part comes in that you got to be extremely organized so things run smooth. 100%. Now the part comes in, and that is the most difficult one of them all. One, how to make it game like, and two, when to begin to make it game like. Because can we start too early and then they're not used to it and now they fail way too much? Talk a little bit about that. Let's get into that.
That's a great point, Pete. That's an awesome point. So starting too early or maybe starting too late, I think it's a great point that you made. And I don't think there's ever a time that you can start too early unless guys just aren't ready. Like, for example, you know, when we come back in the fall, however many guys played, summer baseball, they're probably more game ready than the guys that might have done an internship or might have done, you know, they might have been working or maybe they didn't do anything. Who knows? So let's just say it's 50-50. So 50% of the guys are going to be ready, 50 are not. So we do have to start off slow as far as fundamentals, as far as, you know, installing things. Once you start to kind of, and you get a feel of your team, once you get a feel of your team and where they're at, start making it competitive. Speed it up on them because we want to make it game speed. You can use stopwatches. You can use just a game clock. You can use, you know, you put your fastest runner at the plate and say, this is our fastest guy. Can we get him out on a ground ball to shortstop? And put everybody at shortstop. Can we get him out? Put everybody at second base. Can we get him out? You know, have a guy start at second base, hit a fly ball to the outfield. He's going to score on this base hit. Can you all get him out? And I think, you know, for us, it's typically, you know, towards the end of September, getting into October, where we start making it game-like. So we have about 2.5 to 3 weeks maybe of just, you know, practicing fundamentals and things like that, installing stuff. And then we go game time and we play against, you know, outside, you know, colleges. We played, you know, a couple of JUCOs in the fall. So we gotta have to make a game like, because now there's some intensity. There's some, you know, your energy level is going to be high when you're playing against another team, because you don't know, no matter what, you don't want to lose. So make it competitive during practice. That's such a great point, Pete, that you made. And I just think that when you're putting all this into perspective, wherever your team is at, a new team, brand new guys put together at the youth level, first time everyone's together, make it fun, competitive, you know, make it a game and make a winner. And then, you know, this way the guys are understanding, you know, winning and losing as well. When I say competitive, and, you know, people just say, oh yeah, I can make it competitive and nothing happens at the end. There's gotta be a winner and a loser. That's what happens in baseball, happens in all games. So put that in perspective when you're doing it as well. And I think that if you can make it challenging, so don't just roll a ground ball to them and say, okay guys, you know, two hands. Okay, we got that, coach. Now what? All right, well, go get this one. Put in the diving schemes, you know, make the outfielders dive for balls, make the infielders dive for balls. We're lucky enough to have a pool. So we have practice diving in a pool with tennis ball. So, you know, it's just, again, I think, you know, it's a great question, Pete. Like, you got to put it into perspective. Like, we're not just practicing to practice, we're practicing to play and we're practicing to win. So if we can make it to the point where the guys are practicing like they would play in a game, man, the competition level skyrockets and guys are really like getting after it with each other, and they help each other out because we all want to win.
Well, it makes sense, you know, when you say game-like, boy, that's when everybody has fun anyways, right? So, you know, that makes total sense. Practice really isn't a lot of fun. And I understand it shouldn't be a lot of times because you got to get the work done. But, man, it's a whole lot more fun when it's game-like. Here's an area that I was thinking about as you were talking about it. Folks, and you're going to hear us say a lot about, you know, a lot of it depends on your players, the different ages, the level of ability and all that, the dealing with the pressure, as coach just said. You know, if they're not ready for that, if you try and they're not ready, back off a little bit. But here's the question. When you have a young player who, let's use the example you use, taking ground balls at shortstop and you got runners down first base, running down first, and man, they get too excited, too fast, not under control. Maybe they're nervous, you know, and they throw a couple balls away. What's their self-talk or something that you talk to them about to help them with that?
We're big believers in this is the most important pitch right here. So whatever just happened is now over. We're worried about this one right here. So we try to put that in our head, like win this pitch now. We want to win this pitch. So pitchers, win this pitch right here. Let's throw a strike right here. Let's get this guy out right here. Every position can say that. So if you made a mistake on this pitch, throw it back to the pitcher and say, let him hit it to me again. I got it. Give positive self-talk, win this pitch. Let's go after it. And the more confidence you build through those words, the more confident the player becomes. When you see a player, and it happens at every level, guys put his heads down, puts his head down. They get angry in the dugout. They popped up with runners on second and third or struck out with bases loaded. Guys get angry. Okay. Well, the next time that happens and you're put in that same situation, are you going to fail again? Probably, because you're not giving yourself an opportunity to get back in the driver's seat. And I think it's, if the more positive self-talk you give them, the better. So the example we gave was ground ball to the shortstop. He's just not getting his guy out for whatever reason. He's throwing him safe every time. He's airmailing. He's spiking the ball. More than likely, there's some kind of an issue. It could be up here, but it could be physical as well. So as the coach, I better know which one it is so I can help him get through it. And the more you get to know your players, and I think this is probably the key here, the more you have build a relationship with your players throughout the course of the year, the easier it's going to be to get that guy to understand what you're trying to say. And if you're trying to make this guy who's not a positive guy to become positive, you're going to have your work cut out for you if you have no relationship. So if the better relationship you have, the easier it's going to be to talk that guy off a ledge and be able to make the play, because you've seen him make it 1,000 times before, but right now he's struggling. So, you know, again, another perspective there, but I think it's super important to give those guys some positive talk for themselves.
You know, everybody says that baseball is a team sport, but at the same time, it's individualized in some ways, because you got to do your job. You know, you hear the term all the time, just do your job. And if everybody does their job, you know, you're doing pretty good. I don't watch much football, but I happened to just turn on TV yesterday, watch the playoffs a little bit, Kansas City. And I saw Kansas City, kickoff, I guess he was returning, caught the ball, fumbled it. It was a big play. They scored. And this guy, you know, put his jacket on and he was kind of hiding in the bench and everything. And here's what I saw. And I'm assuming, you know, this needs to be done with teams in baseball. Also, I saw a lot of guys come by, tap him on the shoulder. I know what they were saying. Don't worry about it, man. It's part of the game. You made him. It's over with. Let's, you know, there's a whole game ahead of us, right? I mean, baseball is a team sport too. So the players help each other, you know, when someone else is making a mistake.
So it's funny that you said that. I just kind of saw that today as well. It was Mecole Hardman with the Chiefs. He muffed the punt and had his quarterback, his tight end, a couple of receivers, some defensive guys all came up to him and said, "Hey man, you're going to have to make a big play. You got to get rid of this one now." I think, in my opinion, if your team can do that with itself and not have to get me involved, you're in a really good spot, because that means your team's got control of your own team. They're holding each other accountable and picking each other up. And I think that goes a long way. If you can get your team to buy into that stuff, that we need each other, it's a we thing, not a me thing, you're going to be in a lot better situation. And even if your team's not super successful, maybe you don't have a lot of wins in the win column, maybe, or whatever the case may be, and you have that, you've got a lot.
Yeah, and I bring that up because, again, it's part of the mental game, but you know, it's a whole new topic, because it is also having kids with character. Because when you got kids with character, those are the things that happen. And then all of a sudden the culture really starts to elevate. But let me get back to the practice, because again, I want to delve into the real game situation aspect of it. When we talk about individual drills, because there's individual and team drills, when you talk about individual drills, give some examples to our coaches, how they can work on the fundamentals, you know, and then develop it to where it becomes a little bit more game-like, that particular drill, whether it be hitting, fielding, pitching, it doesn't matter what the area is.
Okay, so I'll start from the outfield and work my way in, and I'll try to do it quickly. So in the outfield, in order for guys to get game-like, you have to be able to put a clock on them. How fast are they in a game from catch to throw in game? And when you get to the point where you're doing that in practice, how fast are they in practice from catch to throw? Now, there might not be anybody running, maybe just rolling on the balls, or maybe it's a soft fungo. But what are they doing, and how fast are they getting rid of that ball? And is it clean? So I stole this from the Navy SEALs, so I feel bad for doing this. But slow is smooth and smooth is fast. That's what we teach. That's how we teach everything. Slow is smooth and smooth is fast. I don't want to be quick. I don't want to be fast right away. I want to be smooth. So I got to start off slow, move smoothly, and it becomes fast. That's how we do everything. And same thing with the infielders. So let's just say, for example, I got a group of four guys, and let's go back to shortstop for a moment, and I'm rolling them ground balls, and we got to turn two. Maybe there's a screen there, not a person. I still want to hit this box. So I got to hit them so I want at my glove side. So I got to hit this box. We put a box on the net. This is what you got to hit. If you're not doing it, how can we slow you down to get there? And then as you get there a few times in a row, okay, now speed it up a half a tick, speed it up a half a tick, go up a little bit of a percentage. It's the same thing with hitting. There's so many different kinds of drills that you can do to get you to start off with, like, just get your top hand, just get your bottom hand. I use both hands. T-work, soft toss, front toss, BP, all these different drills, frisbees. I mean, everybody's got all these kinds of stuff now.
When you bring that up, like example, it'd be like soft toss or even some other drills. Eventually, I mean, they might do a few of these to feel good, but then eventually you're going to toss different zones, different types. Even if you're doing soft toss, you can do that from, right?
100%. So we like to do a lot more with the front toss stuff. I know some guys don't like it. I mean, we do early to get guys to create some rhythm and hand build some confidence. So we talked about confidence earlier. So doing front toss, the ball's going from underhand. We're taking it easy on the guys. They know it's going to be right around the middle of the plate. But like I say, all right, guys, we're going outside this round. All right, guys, we're going inside this round. All right, guys, we're going top of the zone. We're going bottom of the zone. And some guys aren't comfortable in the bottom of the zone. Some guys aren't comfortable on the top of the zone. Some guys aren't comfortable in or out. So how can we get them more comfortable? We keep it simple to start off with. Then we make it challenging. And if they fail, then we dial it back, like you said earlier. But I think, you know, you put all of these different drills and all these things into, the stages. I work from February 13th, game one, backwards. When do I move up? You move up when you see your team starting to get it. Like this past 3 or 4 days with our hitting stuff, we've gotten it. So now guess what? On Wednesday, when we get back at it, we are dialing it up a little bit because now we got to start challenging them. And then we got our pitchers are throwing live on Saturday morning. Guys, we're going to get getting more challenged. So I just think that whatever position you're playing, wherever you are on the field, whether you're talking about offense or defense or even pitching, you can make it competitive to the point where guys start to maybe lose focus. And you have to be able to dial it back a bit to get them back to where it is and give them those keys we talked about earlier. But any drill, you said it before with soft toss, you can move it around and make it more challenging and say, hey, on this round, I'm going to throw it middle away. But if I throw it in, you got to take it. And some guys might struggle with that. Yeah. So we just try to be I don't want to say all over the place as possible, but we want to make it random certain days and we want to make it simple certain days. So we have the best of both worlds. And then when we have our challenging days on a game day, we have no idea what they're doing. Now we put it all on the same page and hopefully the guys are out there loose, having fun and ready to play. Because I don't want guys being tight because they're not prepared for it.
Anthony, when it comes to, I want to jump to the defensive part. Okay. You've got a situation you're setting up with your players. Might be the first time this year that you're setting it up. Could be a bunt situation. It could be first and third. Talk us through how you set it up so we don't waste time doing things we shouldn't be doing, I guess, in some ways. So where do you start with that situation? And then where does it end competitively?
So let's just call it a bunt for now and make this easy. So, runner on first base, bunt coverage. And there's tons of different ways to do this. The first things first, we need to get an out somewhere. So the first thing that we do, breaking it down to the slowest part, is just get the out at first base before we start moving around and throwing the ball to second base. So everyone runs in and out the field. Each pitcher goes, third baseman's in and out, catcher's in and out, the whole defense. Go ahead.
I want to just for a second. Sorry about that. How does a player know what their responsibility is? Because they come from programs, youth programs. So how do you start that? I should have prefaced it with, does it start in a classroom? I'm not a big classroom person. I know there others are, but does it start in a classroom and then, you know, transfer onto the field? And then how do you deal with it on the field?
So, earlier in the conversation, we talked about Zoom calls over the course of the year. So we did PowerPoints on showing what the priorities are for everybody. So you can do it in the classroom, right? Well, let's say you don't have the classroom or you're not that good with Zoom and kind of figured out that way. The first day that you're out there, you're going to walk through everything. Okay. So for us, number one priority is our catcher. He's the number one priority guy. He's got the loudest mouth on the field. Number one priority. If the ball goes down, he's talking. We want the ball in his hand first. Our number two priority is going to be our third baseman. He's been going to be running in from third base. He's going to make the play. to go to first base. Our number three priority is our pitcher. And with each priority, we know that all these positions have to move. So on each play, we go through all nine positions where everybody has to be on each play. We talk this out and walk through it before we even roll the first ball out, if that makes sense. So for us, like, again, the catcher's the first guy. We roll him one. He picks it up. He throws the ball to first base, and we check where everybody is to make sure everybody's in the right spot. The next catcher goes. He does it. The next catcher goes. He does it. Then we go into the third baseman. Third baseman goes. Make sure everybody's in the right spot. And we purposely air mail balls over first base to make sure the right fielder's in play. And if the first baseman gets the ball and we backdoor the guy at second base, the center fielder better be there. If we get a rundown from second to third, left fielder better be there. So on every single play, because we have a rotation of guys, this is team now, team defense. Yep. They're all got to be moving the entire time. And we try to make it, as you get better at it and as you start seeing it working the right way, now it's competition. How fast can we get that outdone and get to the next play as fast as we possibly can? Now, if we start to make it a little bit more challenging and say, all right, guys, we want to get out of second base now. Bunt situation, let's get that out of second base. Now it's more challenging because now there's got to be more communication between all three of the guys going for the ball. So I just think that you have to walk through it initially. If you have the luxury of a classroom or Zoom call or making a PowerPoint, go ahead and do that so you can see the visual. I mean, most athletes are visual guys anyway. So get them in a classroom and do it. But at worst case, and if you're the only guy, talk it out. Start with each position, put them in the right spot, walk through it, and then do it for real.
And then eventually, when you're doing it for real, you got to have real pitching. They got to be throwing
real pitching, real bunting, everything.
I mean, it's for all the marbles. I mean, you know, because if you don't create that in that situation, it certainly isn't going to transfer.
Easiest way to do that, Pete, real quick. Make two teams, make competitive bunting only practice for 30 minutes. We're going to bunt for 30 minutes only. So the guys that have bullpen that needed to throw some bullpens off the mound, they're on the mound, they throw their 10, and they go finish up in the pen, and we get, you know, 50, 60, 70 bunts down in a half an hour, and we're done. Now we're off that, and we're going on to the next thing, whatever it may be, whether it's team BP or defense or whatever it is.
Love it, love it. Anthony, here's a difficult one. You know, at your level, your players are certainly playing certain positions. Now, I know, you know, nowadays, even in the big leagues, you got multi-position players. You see that more and more. Younger levels, you know, that there might be a kid playing shortstop three innings and another kid playing shortstop the next three innings. You know, getting these kids on the same page in that bunt situation, enough work is not easy, but there's really not an answer. You just got to find time to do it.
Well, I think the answer is make the time.
Yeah.
You know, if that, again, going back to my earlier statement, if it's important to you and your program, you need to make the time for it and make sure – again, all right, guys, we're not really going to hit a lot today. We really want to get our team defensive stuff in today. So we're going to take some time on this. If we do it right, we'll have some time for BP later or whatever the case may be. If we don't do it right, we're going to spend some time on this because we want to make sure we got this down, because our last doubleheader, you know, we had the guys bunted against us five times and we failed 4 out of 5. So we got to get this right. So I think if it's important to you and your program, you're going to make the time for it. You need to make the time for it in your practice plan.
And what's funny about that, in some ways, I was thinking, you know, I remember talking to younger coaches, and I used to say to them, you know, just as you just said, you know, organize, know what you're going to practice, know what you need to practice, more importantly. And, you know, I always ask them, I watch youth games. What happens in youth games? Pitcher has to throw the ball to home, right? Runner might get on base. What happens once the runner gets on base? Boom, he steals second base. Then he steals third, right? And nobody can defense it. And I said, if you didn't know anything about the game, and you just set up exactly that quadrant, you know, first base with a runner on first, and you set up three of those, and you just walked away, and you let the kids do it on their own, they're going to figure it out on their own sooner or later how to hold that runner, and maybe even how to throw them out if they just did it over and over and over again.
Sure.
But what the coach can do is shorten that process, because he can teach the pickoff, he can teach the tag, he can teach the catcher what they're doing, the pitcher. And now, so I guess, you know, what you're saying on a basic standpoint, you know, if you do spend the time on it, you can get it done, but you got to know what you need to work on.
Yeah. I think, you know, every coach, you know, even the guys that might just be getting started in the coaching world, you just have to know whatever's important to your program, do it. And I'll tell you this, for us, we like to be very aggressive on the base path. So if we like to be aggressive on the base path, we need to be teaching it regularly. I can't tell them, hey, guys, yeah, we're going to go all the time and then not teach it. We're never going to do base running. So I think if you can break it down position by position and piece by piece early on in your season, early on in your preseason, it's going to make your life a whole lot easier when game times come, because now you've been able to put the whole thing together. Because, I mean, baseball, I mean, just like football can have what, you know, I don't know how many. I didn't play football like that, but there's probably 300-400 different plays you can put in a game offensively and defensively. Well, it's the same thing in baseball. There's a lot of repetition in baseball, but there's a lot of different things that can happen, and each position has to do something different. So if you can break it down and get into smaller groups, and that's why I said if you have more coaches, it's always better. But, you know, I learned this the hard way. Just make my day a little bit longer, but put my guys in smaller groups so I can teach them their part. They know their part, and then they know everybody else's part. And like you said before, if you do your job, that's all we ever ask anybody to do. Do your job, we'll be just fine. Yeah. But we all got to be doing our job. And now if we're all doing our job, that creates wins.
You know, one of the things you said earlier on, and I love this, and we had started doing it a long time ago simply because when we went to tryouts, you're like, you know, I don't want a tryout player. I want a player to see if he can deal with a runner and pressure. You know, but then at the same time, when you do add runners, people might be thinking, well, these kids are running a lot. But, yeah, that's great because that's game speed running, and they need conditioning. So what better condition are you getting? The first baseman's getting work, right, because you're going to have overthrows or whatever. You know, there's so much that can happen in those situations game-like. What are some of the things that you guys practice for your particular team? I guess that you've prioritized. One was base running. You said you do a lot of base running.
Yeah.
So what else is there that you do more game-like than you do other things possibly?
Double plays is probably the next biggest thing, and relays. So those are probably the two biggest things that we work on the most. We work on everything, but I think we work on turning double plays and cutoffs and relays probably the most. Obviously we do a lot of team defense as well. We spend quite a bit of time on first and thirds and bunt coverages, but I think, those two things can win you a ball game if you can turn double play and if you make the right cutoff. And it's simply because of this, I think a lot of guys teach, and this is their thing, and that's fine. A lot of guys teach getting one is okay. If we get two, it's a bonus. Mm-hmm. I think if we get two, we're hitting faster.
Yeah,
and we want to hit way more than we want to be on the field, right? So I think getting two is super important. It's the same thing with our cuts and relays. If I know, not every one of my guys has a great arm. So if I know I've got a guy with a better arm, I'm going to get him a little closer to him so we can get it to his hands and we'll get the ball moving faster. So we have to learn what your personnel is as early as possible. So you let them go at it, the general, generic, the regular way, whatever you want to call it, and see what we can do, and then we make adjustments from there. But I just think that turning double plays, man, that's just huge. And I mean turning double plays in every facet, not just the ground ball to an infielder, but turning double plays from bunts, turning double plays from the pitcher, turning double plays with the outfielders that will double guys off. Like being able to pay attention to the game on a fly ball, the guy on first base takes off and he's like halfway to second base and you're playing right field for whatever reason. Your mind's got to be set, and everyone on the infield's got to be paying attention so he knows, catch the ball, line guys up, get them throwing the ball to first base. So I think if I had to pick, those would be the two that we do the most. And then, you know, obviously bunt coverages, first and thirds, those kinds of things, I think we do plenty often enough. But I would go in order of the top three: base running, double plays, cutoffs, and relays.
You know, and you meant cutoff and relays. It seems to be one that not easy for young players to really get all the time. Maybe we don't practice it enough, but there's so many different situations with, you know, man on first and second, bases loaded, number of outs. I mean, there's so many different things. Is there any way to not speed up the process, but make it a little bit more easier to teach cutoff and relays? Is there any systems that you use or any?
You know, I go back to my little league days and just think about what we did then, you know, line up the whole field and everybody throws the ball to each other, get rid of it as fast as you can, put them in two lines and compete. Right. Yeah. But I think at the college level, you know, because most guys have an idea, I just think that we start with the ball at the fence with just the outfielders and we're throwing it to a net, no base runners, no pressure. Then you add the infielder with some conversation. There's a little bit of pressure because now I have to hit a guy. Yeah. As just opposed to a big 10-foot net. Now you can start to simulate base runners, right? And or actually have base runners. And now the pressure is really on. And now you guys start getting competitive. So the way I like to do a lot of our drills, and I probably should have said this a while ago, but you got to do it in kind of sections and pieces, right? There's progressions to everything. And the more you do progressions early on, the easier it is for guys to get it. Like, you know, if I'm turning a double play, the first thing I got to do is catch it. Then I got to open up. keep my shoulder low, throwing low to high. Outfielders, catch it first, get into your pro step, make sure I hit the cutoff man. And you can do it all in those progressions with every single position, every single situation. But again, what's important to you, and we want to make our cuts and relays right, so we do them a lot from the line to the gap, from the gap to the gap, and from the gap to the line. We do them as many times as we possibly can because, you know, guys can swing it at the D2 level. They can swing it, and their ball's going to get to the fence. So we know how to do single cuts, double cuts. Middle guys can cut. Corner guys can cut. Got to make it happen.
And that's why I think with the younger kids, you know, when I say younger, I'm always saying below high school, 13 and younger.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things, because when there's runners, there's pressure. And then, even though you ran through it, man on first, you know, nobody out, boom, you hit the ball and they ran through with a runner. Once you start putting runners, the pressure hits. I would think you really have to spend a lot of time on that, cutoffs and relays, because cutoffs and relays with runners is really the game. I mean, it happens so much.
A lot.
We need to spend a lot more time on that than any other situation. And the question for you is not only that we need to spend more time on it. The other question is, when you're hitting the ball and a player makes a mistake, how's that corrected?
Well, you got to think there's going to be a ton of people making the same mistake at some point, especially early on. So we'll stop practice. Guys, mm-hmm. Let's talk about this. Why are we making the same mistake? What's the problem here? We've gone through it numerous times, dry runs, just outfielders. What's the problem here? Why are we making this mistake? And it could be something as simple as the cutoff man's not lined up right, which is not normally or may not be his fault. Maybe the guy behind him is telling him to go right, 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 and he's not even there yet, and he just needs to be left by one. So little things like that. We stop it right away and get right back to it, to be honest with you. But at the end of the day, if you can start off with your progressions and just working with your outfielders first, using the net, getting the infielders involved, even if it's just the middle guys or the corner guys, and you do it enough, you know, you also got to pay attention to, you know, where you are in your year and how much guys have thrown, because you don't want to overthrow guys too much. Sure. Even if you do dry runs to make sure you're at least in line without the throws, those are okay too. But I think the more often you can get it done and put it into your throwing plans, making sure, hey guys, we're going to take 12 throws per guy today, 12 long, hard throws with each guy today. Let's make sure we're putting that into our throwing progressions for our pregame or pre-practice stuff with our throwing plans. So put it all, again, we try to plan as much as we possibly can, be ahead of the curve. So we know, all right, today they're going to do their long toss. So we're not going to have them throw 12 hard ones. Today we're going to go to 200, 220. Today we can let them rip it a little bit. So we got to know that stuff too.
Hey, it's a baseball show. So I'm going to throw you a little curveball.
All right.
See if you can hit it. No, I just want to get your thought and see what you think. Because, you know, I don't know, it might've been a few years ago or longer than that. And I was thinking to myself on the question I mentioned, you know, on working on bunt or cutoffs and relays. I was thinking to myself, you know, why am I going on the field, putting a runner on first, and I'm telling the first baseman's going to do this, second's doing this, short's doing that, catcher's doing that, boom, boom, boom. Okay. Because I'm thinking, you know, I don't have a whole lot of time to practice, right? It's real short. A lot of guys don't have a lot of time. So then I started thinking, forget all that. Just don't tell them anything. Just tell them runner on first, the number of outs, and let them do it. And then from watching them do it, one guy may make a mistake. I can now only have to correct that person. I don't have to correct the other guys because they did it right anyways. And I can continue to do that to see how it's going. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, it can go both ways. I think when you're starting with a program that's fresh and new, you'll get to know really quickly if guys know what they're doing, because the older guys will always try to help the younger guys out. Whereas I've been here for 13 years, we know how we're doing the program, so they're going to help out immediately. But yeah, if you got a brand new team or brand new guys, or you're a brand new coach to that program, and you do something like that, that's not a bad idea at all. I don't even hate that idea, to be honest with you. Like, all right, guys, run around first. Here's the play.
Right. But great point. You got a lot of assistant coaches, which are your seniors also. Those are, you know,
1,000,000%. Seniors and juniors for sure.
Yeah, I love that. All right, Coach Ply, how does he act on the field during practice?
How do I act?
It's different, but how, what's your demeanor? You know, what's your?
I'm animated. I like to get in there and take ground balls too. I throw a lot of BP, and now that I got Coach Connor, he's been able to help out. So now I can jump into each drill and kind of help out. But I'm animated. I'm I'm active. I'm loud. We like to move pretty fast. So, you know, like, let's go, let's move. You know, my father was a Marine, so I get that. I got that going for me as well. It's in my blood a little bit, but it's been,
When you see something that you don't like, how do you deal with it?
Depends on what it is. If it's something that we've talked about numerous times and I get mad and I have to flip out, maybe, I guess the word is, I hold on as long as I can until it's enough where the whole team's got to hear it from me, as opposed to, you know, you can call guys out, which I think, and it also depends, knowing, having a relationship, going back to relationship question or problem. I have to have a relationship with guys and know if they can wear it, me being loud and hard on them, or if I got to kind of pat them on the back and, you know, rub their back a little bit and say, hey man, it's going to be okay. It'll be all right. And I got to know when a situation is, but if I got to let it go, I don't have a problem doing that at all. I can let it go a little bit.
Yeah, I got it. Well, it's an Italian in you. That's the problem.
And Puerto Rican. Listen, when both of those worlds collide, forget about it.
You know, the other thing is, you mentioned, we talked about plan.
Yeah.
But plans don't always come to perfection.
100%.
And make adjustments. Talk about how you handle that area.
Let's just say, for example, you know, we got inclement weather coming in and our plan was to get outside and do all this stuff. Or, you know, maybe football needs to get out and use the turf field during the time we wanted to have practice, and we got to make adjustments on the fly. Well, we've come up with a bunch of, you know, A, B, and C plans that if we need to, we can use all those. Obviously, you don't want to go to your B and C plans, obviously, because you want to get certain things done and you have this thing in your head, but you have to be able to adjust on the fly. And we talked about earlier about, you know, maybe, you know, if we're a youth team, you know, you have 12, 15 guys and six guys can't make it and you still have a practice. Well, guess what? You still have to have practice. Mm-hmm. And you still got to get those 8, 9 guys to get some work in. So you got to go to a plan B and whatever's going to work for you guys at that moment in time. If your plan was to do team defense that day and half your team's not there, well, you're not doing team defense that day. You're going to have to switch that to another day and bring something else in there. So inclement weather, you know, have your plan B, whether it's inside using the cages or maybe it's in the classroom talk, or maybe, you know what, today we're going to just do some team building stuff, whatever it may be. But if you have a backup plan, I think it's going to help you. But if you're doing your due diligence early on in the week, knowing what the weather is going to look like, you can minimize those situations. But again, there's some things that you can't minimize. You know, we're in a pandemic. Now we have to go in smaller groups. Now we have to go at different times of the day. Okay, let's make sure we can plan that out too. We can plan all you want, like you said, Pete, and the plans don't always work out. But at the end of the day, you can minimize those opportunities for yourself by doing the work ahead of time.
Yeah, and I love that you added all this, because now it really reaches out to our teams around the world. Not all teams, but a lot of teams, especially in Europe, you know, where they might have 15 players, but only 8, 9 can show up that day. There's work, there's, you know, school, there's a lot of different factors. And what's interesting is how you talked about the blocks, because they could do the same thing. Guys miss practice, they come different day and do their work. So I love that, because it fits everybody. Let's talk about some of the things in when we're doing the practice, especially the game-like stuff. What are some, or even to ramp it up to regular practice, what are some of the mistakes that we need to stay away from, possibly? Some of the things that we're doing wrong, that as coaches we could be doing wrong that we shouldn't be doing.
As a coach, I think this is for me personally. I would say this is coming from some of the mistakes that I've made. We just talked about getting on some guys in the middle of practice. There is definitely a time to get that done. And typically it's early on in the year, so guys know where the discipline factor and what we're trying to be as a program. So it doesn't happen later on in the year. And I was early on in my career, I was the guy that let it slide a little bit because I had to get this job done. I wanted to get these reps in and I wanted to get these fungos done and I wanted to get this amount of BP in. So I let it go until the end of practice. And by that time, guys have long forgotten about it. And sometimes I might've even forgotten about what happened, you know, an hour and a half ago. So typically nowadays we'll stop practice really, really briefly, hit that point. I got pretty good kids now. So the nonsense stuff doesn't really happen. It's more of the actual physical stuff that happens, or maybe some laziness that might happen. So you get on the kid if he needs it. And again, I might bring this up quite a bit. It's the relationships you build with those guys to know who can wear it and who can't, and what times you can do it and when. And believe it or not, we said it earlier, your seniors and juniors will take care of the freshmen and sophomores because they've been there and they either want to continue the winning tradition or they want to get to become a winning tradition. So they're not going to stand for the nonsense as well. And a lot of it takes care of itself prior to even practice starting. Mm-hmm. You know, in the residence halls, in the dorms, in the cafeteria, you know, in the classrooms, on the way to and from places, before in the locker room. lot of that stuff gets taken care of beforehand, and I think that's huge. But me, professionally, as a coach, some of the mistakes I made was thinking or assuming that we know we got to get two here, or first one first, or, you know, hey, you know, guys, everybody knows how many outs there are. I don't ever want to assume anymore. So we make sure there's a checks and balances for how many people are going to be saying how many outs there are, what the count is, what the situations are on defense, and then on offense, being able to slow it down and having checks and balances of how many guys are going to talk to the hitter prior to going up to the plate, because you don't want too much in their brain. And I think, like I said, for me, I think the biggest one was, you know, when to let it out and when to hold it in, when to do it as a team, when to do it individually, when to do it with just a group. Remember when I was a kid, and maybe you the same, you know, if one guy was late, we were all late. You know, if one guy got messed it up, we all messed up. So, you know, I remember being a basketball player with Indian runs for 20 minutes because somebody showed up 5 minutes late. You know, those kinds of things. You know, some of that stuff is helpful in situations. Some of it's not. And obviously there's a time and a place for it. And I think sitting guys down one-on-one weekly or biweekly and getting some more input from them builds the relationship and helps you be able to get to that guy a lot quicker, as opposed to letting it get to the situation on the field where it could be bad. More importantly, communicating with them on a regular basis, tell them that you love them, tell them you got their back. I mean, it really goes a long way. And I think communicating with your guys, even if they're 12, you don't have to tell them that you love them, but hey man, I got you. I care about you. You know, take care of your guys. I mean, you want them to take care of you, you got to take care of them. So, you know, I'm a firm believer in that. I think I always will be. And I think, you know, whether I stay at Lincoln or move on to another place, I'm going to take that with me. And I think that, you know, those are probably the biggest things. I'm going to make mistakes on the field. I'm going to send a guy when I shouldn't, you know, I'm going to, you know, put the wrong guy in the lineup and should have put this guy. I want to make a bad pitching decision. Absolutely. That's part of the game though. And I'm okay with those mistakes, and I have to hold on to those. But, you know, making a guy feel bad when you don't have to in front of everybody, embarrassing the kid, I think those days are kind of gone, unless the kid can wear it. And again, there's a time and a place, and you have to build those relationships.
And there were times when I was a kid, there were times where if a kid was late, he would sit down and everybody else had to run. Right. You know, and then we weren't very happy about that. So that he was always on time after that, because we made sure he was on time.
Exactly. Running. Pete, that goes a long way, man. When a team can get the team to do the right thing, yep. You got all those assistant coaches, like you just said, man, it goes a long way when a team helps the team out to win.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, folks, Coach Pla at practice, he came back for this. Now he's got to go back. I'm not even sure he ate. So I'm going to finish it off here with just a couple quick things. Want anything else, because there's so much, especially anything else you want to add to the game-like stuff, and then I'll close it off on one more thing.
Well, let me hit the practice plan stuff first, and just because that was the bulk of our conversation. I think to understand where your program wants to be, and you'll get a lot of feedback from your players on this, start with that. Make sure you're organized. Have a plan. Create your own – I call it a beast. Create your own beast. And follow that plan, whatever it is, whatever kind of practice plan you have. Don't just go out there and just hit a few fungos and throw some BP and call it a day. Give those guys some structure. They want it. That's why they're there, and they want to have some fun. So put it all into perspective, be organized, have that plan. Know what you're going to do ahead of time, so the guys know, and your practice will go a whole lot further. And as far as making it game-like, keep it competitive, have a winner and a loser. So they know what it feels like, and they can each feel it, you know, and change it up sometimes and let the same team win every time, the same team lose every time, have them feel it. But I think, you know, stopwatches are our friends sometimes, and sometimes they're not. If you put a stopwatch on guys, you'll be able to get them to become slow, smooth, and fast, smooth as fast. And, you know, have them push each other as much as you possibly can. An upperclassman will get a chance to push younger guys early on. But if that young guy is better than the older guy, you're going to see a lot of competition happen. So let them have the fun and let them get to the finish line together. And if you have the right plan in front of them, that, you know, it's limitless what you can create in a program.
You know, what I love about it is that, you know, people keep saying, let them have fun, but you're explaining how that fun comes about. You can't just say have fun, and you're explaining how to get it done. I love it. Listen, Coach, last thing, you have a website, correct?
LULions.com. You're talking about like school website?
School? I thought there were videos too. No, just like, a school website.
No, a school website. So, my Twitter, I have stuff on Twitter and Instagram and stuff. So, Twitter. My Twitter is @CoachPla1. My Instagram is @CoachPla1. Everybody can look it up. I got some cool stuff on there. I retweet a lot of stuff. There's some great content out there, man. And I'm just a little piece of it. So I love it. @CoachPlaw1.
We all keep sharing stuff, and that's what I love. You know, you just keep forwarding, everybody sees it, and that's the name of the game. Baseball coaches are great at that. They'll share everything they have, and that's what I love about them.
It's a great fraternity, Pete.
Get the practice. I know I don't want to be the cause of it. Then you guys.
No, you're good, man.
But we will get all your information out, and thanks for being on the show, man.
Pete, I appreciate you having me. You're doing a great job. I love what you're doing. I appreciate this time. Thank you. 1,000,000% thank you.
Been my fault because I told Coach Pla, I got to have you on, I think that was like 5 months ago. I finally pulled it off. So it's my fault why we didn't have him on. Great stuff. Hey, folks, that is Coach Pla at Lincoln University. We'll put all the show notes up. Don't forget, a special thank you to him. Special thanks to our producer, Brian Kroc with the Lineup Media Group. And, of course, the best thank you to everybody in the U.S. and around the world, all our audience. We love you. You know, we can't thank you enough for sharing the show. We got over 100 countries listening, and we are proud of that. And that's because of you listeners. All right, folks. My name is Pete Caliendo. I'm the host of Baseball Outside the Box. Stay safe. Stay healthy. And God bless you. We'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.